One of the hardest parts of getting older is feeling like something's off in your body, but not knowing exactly what. It's not just aging. It's often your hormones, too. When they fall out of balance, everything feels off. But here's the good news. This doesn't have to be the story of your next chapter. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is an herbal formula made with science-backed ingredients designed to fine-tune your hormones by balancing estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol. It helps with common issues such as hot flashes, poor sleep, low energy, bloating, and more. With over 40,000 reviews and a bottle sold every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. A survey found 86% of women lost weight, 77% saw an improved mood, and 100% felt like themselves again. Start your next chapter feeling balanced and in control. For a limited time, get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today. And get your old self back naturally.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
Welcome to American Hauntings, the podcast dedicated to the history, hauntings, legends, lore, and the dark side of American history. And welcome to the latest episode of Season 9, which we call Based on a True Story. American Hauntings is written and performed by Troy Taylor, that's me, and is produced and co-hosted by Cody Back. And we just wanted to take a moment to say thank you to all our new listeners, and of course those listeners who have been with us for years. As those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis, and again, thank you for that, you already know ghosts, hauntings, murder, and true crime are my full-time job. Every day pretty much revolves around bringing you some kind of weird and macabre entertainment. But my friend and co-host Cody has a real job, and one that's often very demanding of his time. And because of that, when technical issues or something that occasionally happen, the show might get delayed a little or even be a little uneven. So we just wanted to say thank you for your patience and continued support. And we're going to keep working hard to bring you the best show possible. We're also going to try something a little different and more officially divide the show into two parts. The first half of the show will keep being your regular episode, just like we've always done, the story portion of the show, written and narrated by me. The second half of the show is what we'll be calling the American Hauntings postmortem of this week's story, where Cody and I will discuss the story, answer questions, ask questions, and dig a little deeper. We'll also be reading your reviews, your emails, your messages on the haunt line, and talking about special or upcoming events or books or whatever. It's going to be the show after the show, where we dig deep into the episode of the week. For those of you who only want the story, you got it. For the rest of you who don't mind the discussion and banter, then we've got you covered too. So essentially, you're going to keep getting two shows in one each week. And if you're a subscriber to our Patreon feed, you'll be getting that alternative show in your feed every other week too. So you'll have even more American Hauntings coming to you throughout the month. Plus, we're even going to start offering some rewards for your loyalty and reviews. So stay tuned for the postmortem half of the show to hear more about that. But for now, let's get on with this show as we bring you episode 7 of our latest season based on a true story. And this one is The Exorcism of Emily Rose. If you're a fan of this show, or merely a ghost enthusiast, or are intrigued by the paranormal, then you're obviously familiar with hauntings, those persistent visitations by spectral beings who can wreak havoc on the lives and homes of ordinary people and don't have rational explanations. Hauntings can be unnerving, frightening, even terrifying to some people, but while irritating and perhaps even destructive, they're certainly not life-threatening. It's always been said that the mysterious beings behind the hauntings don't ever hurt people. But then how do we explain the stories when they do? What about those allegedly true accounts of people who seem to be targets for horrifying activity, whose lives end up ruined by something that seems to be more malevolent and dangerous than your average garden variety run-of-the-mill ghost? Many people, okay, mostly on TV shows, but stick with me here, would insist those attacks aren't caused by ghosts at all, but by demons, which are widely believed to be supernatural entities from the Christian Bible, fallen angels with a wide assortment of names. Is this accurate? I don't know. No one does, which is why it's always so funny to hear people who insist their theories about demons are utterly true. Well, maybe a sinister type of haunting gets called demonic by someone on TV, and maybe it's nothing more than an angry spirit. I mean, if a person was vicious and cruel in life, and ghosts really are the personalities of dead people, then it makes sense to say that they'd also be cruel and vicious in death, too. And that would be, in my opinion, pretty darn scary. Or maybe what gets called a demon isn't what the variations of Christian churches thinks it is. Their narrow definition leaves out an awful lot of other faiths around the world, and since people believed in spirits that attacked and even possessed people long before Christianity became a thing, then maybe there's something else. But what are they? Well, I don't know. And neither does your local priest or minister, which again makes this all that much scarier. Because based on some of the stories, firsthand accounts, and historical records that are out there, something has been happening to people for hundreds of years, destroying homes and lives for centuries. I mean, we can call them whatever we want, but whatever they really are, one thing seems clear, that they're scary and they're dangerous. So how does it happen that people end up possessed or their houses end up infested with something? Well, nobody knows that either. It turns out that people who endorse the idea of demons causing hauntings and possessions have an entire list of things they believe can cause people to be targeted by them. At the top of the list is dabbling in the occult and black magic. And this can include anything from an interest in the occult to practicing black magic, using a Ouija board, or even purposely summoning a demon. Though I can think of much better things to do if you're just bored some evening at home. Well, it's been said these things can attract the attention of demons and can serve as sort of an engraved invitation for them to show up at your house. And man, they don't ring the doorbell, they just come right on in. But don't worry, there are a lot of signs when they're around. Those who claim to be experts have a whole list of things too. So here they are if you want to write them down. You might have unexplained noises. Now, this isn't just a random bump in the night. We're talking about a haunted house on steroids. It might happen in a specific place, like a closet or a basement, as if basements aren't scary enough. It might also sound like a threatening voice speaking your name or the name of someone in your house. You might hear other stuff too, like banging, stomping, scratching from inside the walls. Some claim that things become more intense. The sounds can also start to include screams, heavy breathing, inhuman voices, large objects moving, and more. And you also might have frightened animals. Since a lot of people think our pets can see and hear things we can't, if your cat suddenly starts avoiding certain rooms, or your dog starts barking in an empty space, or is terrified by something you can't see, you might need to worry. Then there are those terrifying dreams. Victims often report strange and terrible dreams that go along with all the weird stuff happening in the house. These are not ordinary bad dreams and nightmares. These dreams are crazy and much more violent than usual. And then there's the manipulation of religious objects. There are also reports of religious items being broken, damaged, or disturbed, since Bibles, rosaries, crucifixes, and other religious objects would technically be a threat to demons. And then there's terrible odors. And by those, I'm not talking about your kids or your husband, but an unexplained and horrible stench that's been known to vary from sulfur-like rotten egg smell to decomposing corpses to what some have described as burning urine, which sounds great. And that's just part of the list, but it's when those events seem to start to target just one person in the house that you may really have trouble on your hands. Up to this point, the list I've given you is what's referred to by religious figures as an infestation by demons. Most priests who do exorcisms will say this covers most of the cases they handle. People or homes that are being influenced by demonic activity, and not what we think of when we hear about things like possession. Now, if an infestation can't be stopped, then it progresses to what's referred to as obsession. Demons are said to act like parasites, latching onto people and draining them of their energy. This can cause mood swings and dramatic personality changes, or a person might start having inexplicable accidents, feel sick and uneasy, and find cuts and scratches appearing on them when they don't know where they came from. They might also begin to experience health problems, financial issues, destructive behavior, withdraw from family and friends, and possibly even start to entertain thoughts of suicide. And then things might only get worse after that, turning into a full-blown possession. Well, then what? Well, you find an old priest and a young priest. Okay, I'm just kidding. But if it gets to that point, you better find an exorcist. Among Catholics, exorcists are highly trained specialists that go through years of schooling to learn how to safely expel demons. If all the rules are followed, the priest has to arrive, study the case, and make sure it fits all the criteria of an infestation and possible possession before anything else can get done. And then you got to get permission from a bishop, and the list goes on. Now, have those rules always been followed? No, but we'll come back to that. If a possession can be confirmed, then exorcism rituals have to be conducted to try and rid the person of the demon. An exorcism is a series of ceremonial rituals that are conducted by trained and experienced specialists, and an entire exorcism can last for hours, days, weeks, months, even years in some cases. It's not like on TV or in the movies. There's rarely a clear end in sight when it begins. And it can be grueling, exhausting, faith-shattering, and can even be dangerous, maybe even fatal, to not only the person believed to be possessed, but also to the priests involved too. So why in the world would anyone want to be an exorcist? That's actually an easy one: to help other people and do good works in service to God and to others. And that's even when it means sacrificing your life to save someone else, if that's what it takes. Anyone who becomes a priest, especially an exorcist, does so with the best of intentions. But then we all know what the road to hell is paved with. But I digress. Over the years, there have been scores of what have believed to be authentic possessions and exorcisms that have been documented. I've written about a lot of them myself. Are they real? I can't say. Religious figures will insist they are, but all I could tell you is that with a number of cases, I do believe that something happened. Something terrifying, violent, and maybe even inexplicable. But a demon? I don't know. I never tell anyone what they should or shouldn't believe about any of this. You have to judge the reality of any kind of supernatural happening for yourself. I just present the information I have, and then you can decide what you want to believe. Some of you might wonder how, if I've been writing about demons and exorcisms for so many years, I've never made a solid decision about what I believe. And that's a fair question, but it's impossible for me to answer. There just seem to be too many variables with each and every case for me to be able to make a blanket statement of belief. There are a lot of cases that have been deemed authentic by the religious powers that be. Now, are they? Maybe. They're definitely scary, and all those cases had multiple eyewitnesses who swore what they saw was genuine. But what if they got it wrong? Earlier, I mentioned that as an attack progresses from the infestation to the possession stage, victims begin to have serious mood shifts, personality changes, destructive behaviors, and even consider suicide, believing they're going insane. Religious officials believe this is a sign of demonic possession. But what if it's not? What if, in some cases, the victims are just mentally ill? And if that's what's going on, couldn't an exorcism do more harm than good? You better believe it. Annalise Mikkel was born in September 1952 and was raised in a normal, happy family in Bavaria. Her father, Joseph, operated a profitable sawmill, and he and Annalise's mother, Anna, were strict Catholics who raised their daughter to also be religiously devout. Her life changed in 1968 when she began suffering from violent seizures. They were so severe that her family was terrified and rushed her to the hospital, where a neurologist diagnosed her with epilepsy. Because of the seriousness of the seizures and severe depression that followed her diagnosis, Annalise was admitted for treatment at the hospital. Well, even though still having seizures, Annalise was eventually able to return to school in the fall of 1970. She moved into the dorms at the University of Würzburg, where she began studying elementary education. But what no one else knew at the time, she was also hearing voices and seeing demonic faces during her daily prayers. At the university, her seizures and hallucinations continued. She finally confessed to her doctors and her parents about the voices and said they were starting to give her orders and threatening her that they would take her to hell. Her medications were increased, but it didn't seem to help. Finally, thanks to her strict Catholic background, Annalise became convinced that she was possessed. 4 more years of medical treatment followed, but her condition and her depression continued to worsen. Soon, her parents began to share her fears that she was demonically possessed. Well, in the summer of 1973, her parents visited several different pastors, pleading for an exorcism for their daughter. Their requests were denied. Annalise didn't meet the criteria, and they were told to have Annalise continue with her medical treatment and medication, and she did, but nothing seemed to help. In 1974, the church finally decided to get involved. After meeting with the young woman, Pastor Ernest Alt, a local parish priest and a priest who considered himself a specialist in possession, requested permission to perform an exorcism from the Bishop of Würzburg, Joseph Stangl. The request was again denied. The bishop suggested that Annalise try and live a more religious life, and that might bring her peace. But Annalise was already leading a deeply religious life, and more prayers didn't help. Her behavior became even more erratic. At her parents' house, she wreaked havoc on everything and everyone she touched. She insulted, berated, and screamed at her family. She attacked them, hitting them and beating her parents and her sisters and biting them until they bled. She refused to eat because the demons wouldn't allow it, she said. She slept on the stone floor of the basement, ate spiders, flies, and pieces of coal, and even began drinking her own urine. She could be heard screaming throughout the house for hours and ran about breaking crucifixes, destroying religious paintings, and tearing apart rosaries. Annalise also began mutilating herself, cutting her arms and legs. When she needed to urinate, she simply stopped wherever she was, raised her skirt, squatted, and urinated on the floor. Well, when these developments reached Bishop Stangl, he finally changed his mind about the exorcism. In September 1975, he assigned Father Arnold Renz to perform an exorcism with Father Alt as his assistant. And for the next 11 months, all medical treatment of Annalise was stopped. No medicine, no doctors, nothing. The rites of exorcism were carried out secretly in the bedroom of her parents' home during one-hour sessions. The attacks that she suffered from during the exorcism were sometimes so violent, she had to be held down by 3 men or even chained to the floor. Well, during the rest of the day, at least at first, Annalise tried to go on about her life and studies, even taking her final exams to become a teacher. But none of the normal things about Annalise's life were destined to last. She just became sicker or continued to be possessed, depending on what you believe. Her symptoms always returned, and not just during the exorcism. She frequently became paralyzed or unconscious, and the exorcism went on, stretching over the weeks and months, always with the same prayers that didn't seem to be helping. Annalise refused to eat for days at a time. Eventually, her knees ruptured from the more than 600 times she fell to her knees to pray during her exorcism prayers. The last exorcism session was held on June 30th, 1976. By this time, Annalise had contracted pneumonia and was totally emaciated and was running a high fever. She was too exhausted to physically perform the rituals of the ceremony, but her parents held her up, drug her around the bedroom, and literally walked her through the motions. Beg for absolution was the last thing that Annalise said to the priests. Her words to her mother, though, were much more heartbreaking. "Mama, I'm afraid," she said. She died that night at the age of 23 from starvation. The autopsy report, which recorded her weight at only 68 pounds, stated that her death, caused by malnutrition and dehydration, resulted for almost a year of semi-starvation during the exorcism. Her death was reported almost immediately, but prosecutors waited nearly 2 years to bring charges against Annalise's parents and the two exorcists for negligent homicide because they failed to bring a medical doctor into the case. At the trial, which began on March 30, 1978, a series of doctors testified that Annalise had died from a combination of epilepsy, mental disorders, and an extreme religious environment. And as a result, she'd starved to death. One doctor stated that if she'd been treated even just a week before her death, her life could have been saved. The prosecution claimed that Annalise had been convinced by the church that she was possessed, thanks to her mental illness. They told the jury that her epilepsy, which was also untreated during the exorcism, had influenced her psychosis. They also blamed the film The Exorcist for creating Annalise's delusions in the first place. Throughout the trial, Joseph Michael, Annalise's father, sat impassively, listening to the testimony, while Anna steadily took notes, pausing only to moan, "Oh dear God," whenever a doctor alleged that her daughter was not possessed but had a mental disorder. They had never and would never refuse to believe their daughter had not been infested by demons. The Catholic Church paid for the defense attorneys and maintained that the possession was real. They kept audio tapes during the sessions and played them in court. The tapes were filled with screams and howls, as well as the exorcist prayers and voices that came from Annalise that were not her normal speech patterns. The voices spoke to each other and the exorcists and claimed they were the demons inside of Annalise, fighting over which one of them had to leave her body first. Now, here's a snippet from one of those tapes, and if you can, try and imagine what this would have sounded like to you if you'd been on the jury during the trial.
Yeah, I'll be making some pain. Yeah, I'll be making some pain.
Weil er eine starke I was trying to help you.
No one from the church that was involved with the exorcism had any doubt that Annalise was genuinely possessed. Father Renz and Father Alt were convinced that it had been only her death that had freed her from her demons. She was now, they believed, with God. In the end, the accused were found guilty of manslaughter resulting from negligence and were given a six-month suspended sentence. The jury had no choice but to find them guilty based on the evidence that was presented, but were so unsettled by the audio tapes that were played that a light sentence was handed down. The prosecutor wasn't buying demonic possession, but he did agree to the sentencing because he felt Annalise's parents had suffered enough. But the trial was not the end of Annalise's story. In 2005, the trial and her exorcism inspired the film The Exorcism of Emily Rose, which starred Laura Linney, Tom Wilkinson, Campbell Scott, Colm Feore, and Jennifer Carpenter, who played Dexter's sister in the Showtime series, as Emily Rose, the movie version of Annalise Mackell. The film follows Laura Linney as a self-proclaimed agnostic who acts as defense counsel representing a parish priest, played by Tom Wilkinson, who is accused of negligent homicide after performing an exorcism. The film does deviate from the real-life events by moving the setting to the United States and subsequently changing the names of the characters, but it does present the most chilling aspects of the case and, I think most importantly, allows those who watch it to decide for themselves if they believe Emily Rose was truly possessed. The film was directed and the screenplay was written by Scott Derrickson, who has written and directed a lot of other great films like Sinister, Deliver Us from Evil, The Black Phone, and others, and by Paul Harris Boardman. According to Derrickson, he asked Boardman to work with him on the screenplay because he sees himself as a believer and Boardman as a skeptic. And this gave the screenplay two different perspectives, which gave it the kind of ambiguity it needed. And when it comes to films about exorcisms, and boy, I think I've seen about all of them, good, bad, and ugly, this is one of the best and one of my personal favorites. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to check it out because it's not your usual exorcism movie. In the end, we have to decide for ourselves, with the movie and with real life, about whether we believe this was a real possession. I have my opinion, and I'm sure you'll have your own. A lot has changed since the 1970s, and even many of those convinced of the reality of demonic possession today believe that Annalise suffered from mental illness that was misdiagnosed as possession by an eager priest and a bishop who was so tired of being harassed that he just went along with what the family wanted because he didn't see what harm it could do. Well, he found out what harm it could do. But her death did lead to one change. Starting in 1978, it became mandatory to have a medical and psychiatric doctor involved in a case before someone could undergo an official exorcism. Well, this was good news for possible victims in the future, but sadly, it didn't do anything for Annalise. Her death was a tragedy, no matter what the cause, made even more tragic by the fact, I believe, that it could have been easily avoided. Well, thanks again for listening to American Hauntings, and we hope you'll stay tuned for the postmortem section of the episode. It's coming up right after these messages from our sponsors.
What I care about is telling Emily Rose's story.
Holy Church venerates thee as her.
her guardian and protector. To thee, the Lord has entrusted the souls of the redeemed to be led into heaven. Pray therefore, the God of peace, to crush Satan beneath our feet, that we may no longer retain men's battle.
Do you understand how long they can put you away for this?
I want people to hear what only I can tell.
And what is that?
What really happened to Emily, and why?
So she believed that her actual possession began that night at the hospital?
I think she did.
Emily had epilepsy. Father Moore's beliefs are based on superstition.
Did Father Moore ask you to give her any medical help?
I couldn't help her.
Why couldn't you help her?
Because there are no injections against the devil.
Emily? Hey, can you hear me?
Demons exist whether you believe in them or not. Just be careful, Aaron. There are forces surrounding this trial. Emily, can you hear me?
There goes some queen in this hobby spot!
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Ready for a little more American Hauntings this week? Well, we're back with the American Hauntings podcast, the postmortem after the episode, where we dissect this week's show. My name is Troy Taylor, and I'm the guy who narrates, writes, and dreams up some of this stuff. And across from me is the guy who I bully into doing things the way I want to do them. My friend, producer, sidekick, and co-host, Cody Back.
Oh, Troy. Before people don't know this, but before we got on here and Troy didn't have his headphones in yet, but I could hear him talking. But I heard you go from what a day to what a week. It's Monday to what a month
to what a month. Yeah. Oh God.
And then this episode is just it's not going to be anything happy either. But it's
no.
It's just everything feels heavy right now. Heavy today.
It does. You know? It does. It has been a very trying little couple of weeks here. So. We moved, my Sam's
mother passed away, so she has now joined the club with you, little orphan Sammy club. That's she called herself that.
Okay, beautiful, perfect.
So, yeah, okay. Yeah. No, I didn't do it. So yeah, it's been a rough it's been a rough bit of time here. So
yep.
Anyway, I'm sure it's all going to get better soon.
So, yeah.
So we keep saying that about this year. We keep saying, oh, 2025 is the way to go. Yeah, we'll see.
So if you're also listening to this episode and you're feeling the weight of everything, hopefully this will take you out of it for just a little bit. You
know, at least for a little while.
Give you a distraction for now or whatever.
Yeah. So, oh boy. Anyway,
what do we got coming up in the future? Maybe some things to look forward to.
Yeah, we do have some things to look forward to. I sent out an email, people who get our newsletter thing and the other day, and talking about some of the extra stuff we've been doing at the museum. It's not all just the dinner events that I do. I love doing them. I got another one this coming week, and I do them a lot, as you probably know. But we've been doing some extra stuff too, because we never know. I mean, we know our days are numbered, probably where we're at, not the museum. The museum will live on, but probably where we are. So we've been trying to do some extra stuff there, but workshop-y type things. We did a seance a couple of weeks ago that was a lot of fun. We had a really good turnout for it, a really great group of people. So this Friday, we have the Estes Method workshop that we do. And if you're familiar with it, it is one of those, it's a spirit communication thing where people put on headphones and blinders and listen to one of those spirit boxes that kind of scans through the things. And then they speak out loud about what they hear while someone else, unknown to them, because they're cut off, they can't see, can't hear, are asking questions to possibly, you know, whoever might be there. And it's some really compelling stuff. We did some of that at the seance, and it's pretty cool. But anyway, we've got one of those coming up this Friday. I got a handful of spots left. That's the only reason I mention it, is just because it's almost full. And then on April 5th, we have a Black Mirror scrying workshop, which is kind of a how-to thing. I know we're doing like pendulums and dowsing and stuff later in the summer, but the Black Mirror thing is also another one of those things that people really into with, it's not necessarily all spirit communication. It's sort of, you know, a little bit of insight into yourself and kind of thing. It's just kind of cool. So we're trying to do some different things. April 11th, we've got the Ghostlight Mysteries that we're doing. And that is that is not me. I'm just sort of hosting that. But it's actually a couple of buddies of mine that are magicians, and they're doing a recreation of old time seances, making things appear and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And, you know, anything you've ever read about it, an old seance, these guys can do it. They did a show a couple of years ago at the conference, and we had to convince people that it was not real. I mean, that's how good they are.
Yeah.
So we've got that coming up on the 11th. We're the reservations are starting to trickle in. So we hope that we can count on some support for that. It's just one of those things where we're trying to do to kind of, you know, keep the museum active, like when I'm out of town or when we don't have a dinner event, just to kind of keep something going all the time. And of course, you know, the museum is there all the time, every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So people can come and check it out and see what we're doing there. So yeah, anyway, that's what I got coming up in the near future. And you can check out websites and stuff. Just go to AmericanHauntings.net and you can see what we've got coming up anytime after that. DinnerandSpirits.com, you know the drill, all the various websites that we have. So anyway, so Patreon. It's Patreon supporters.
Yes, yeah? Absolutely. So yes, thank you so much for supporting the show, and shout out to our new subscribers. So shout outs to Tina, Kristen, Melissa, Joseph, Carol, Kayla, and Lauren. And we do have a couple quick little stories to tell about.
Yeah, this. I've got some too. About the Patreon. Listen, we haven't had anybody quit after the last episode, which is good. Nobody dropped out. Not that I'm aware of it. I did check it, honestly, after I started getting all these messages. I've been warning everybody since the beginning of this season. I mean, this is our fifth season. We do, as part of our Patreon, we do an alternative podcast to this one. It is one that really focuses on like one particular story or case from American history. And it's always like, you know, everybody laughs about all the good old days. No, they're mm-hmm. they were horrible, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep.
And so we've had four seasons of horrible, and we're into the fifth season of horrible. And this is the Albert Fish season. And I keep warning everybody, you know, this is going to get really bad. I mean, it's going to get really gruesome here. And I'm warning you. I'm warning you. And I said it when I posted the episode. I said it leading into the episode. You know, I apologized in advance. I telling everybody, you know, I would tell you that listener discretion is advised, but mm-hmm. I warned you. I literally warned you. So anyway, the last episode ran, and I'll let you share your story.
Yeah, so there are two different things. One, somebody commented in our – we have a Facebook group for Patreon supporters, and so Troy and I get in there and interact with people, and I wasn't exactly aware. I thought they were talking about
– You hadn't listened to it yet. This was like right after it came out.
Right, and so I'm thinking – because somebody said like, you know, Cody, what did you do or whatever, and I was like, hold on a second. And I was thinking about the mainline episode, and I was like, you know, this wasn't me. And then you chimed in to kind of clear things up. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So a lot of people were saying, you know, it was a rough one. And then that was just some phone banter and things back and forth. But then our friend Jeff Porter from Rabbit Grin Productions, he sent me a text. And he had a quote from your episode. And I'm not going to
repeat it.
Mostly because I just don't want to. But he had said, man, when Troy said, you know, blah, 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 you know, it kind of ruined my lunch. And I was like,
he was eating lunch.
And I was like, Jeff, I know the story of Albert Fish. I'd forgotten that particular line, though. And I was like, so now you've ruined my lunch, too, Jeff.
Yeah,
so
it was for one of the charming letters that he had written to various women.
And it's one of the
grossest things you've ever heard. And you know. And I got a lot of comments on this one, and I tried to respond to all of them that I could. And you know, before we had to move, and people were, you know, were asking about, you know, certain parts of the episode. And I think I may have gotten a little too into it toward the end when things were getting really crazy. But it's definitely something that is I don't know. I wouldn't even call it an acquired taste. We don't do this very often. No. But again, the subject matter is kind of a giveaway that some weird things are going to happen.
Don't use acquired taste.
Good point. So anyway, if you're wondering what the hell we're talking about, we do offer that show every other week. So it kind of fits in with the regular run of this particular show that you're listening to now. So you get a new show every week. So if you want to check it out, it is patreon.com/AmericanHaunting.
Awesome. We got a listener review to kind of pick things back up after.
Oh, yeah. After let's that. Do that. Yeah.
This one's titled Immediately Hooked, and it is from Lady Galahad. It says, I was searching through podcasts after catching up with Mr. Ballin and Mr. Ballin's Medical Mysteries, and after trying a few, I stumbled on American Hauntings. I clicked on a random episode because it sounded interesting enough, and I was immediately hooked. I love that the first half is telling the story and the second half is kind of going behind the scenes. Definitely recommended for anyone who's interested in the dark side of American history. So thank you very much for that review. And that's pretty appropriate.
Yeah. And we're going to start something new as we started this postmortem. They're at least calling it that. We decided to do something new. So if you leave a review for us on iTunes, even if you don't listen there, if you do leave us a review, we'll be reading at least one review during each postmortem episode. And if we read your review, and we won't know who you are because, you know, everybody uses a weird screen name. So, but if you do hear us and we do read your review, we'll send you something cool in the mail. So if you hear your review, text me your address on the hotline at 217-791-7859. And I will make sure that we drop something cool in the mail to you. So get out there, leave us some reviews. Like I said, we'll read at least one. And if you hear it, you can text us and we'll get your address so that we can send you something.
Sweet. Yeah. Are you ready to dive into the episode?
Sure. I am ready if you're ready.
The very first thing I wrote was demons and such. What are they?
I know, right? Yeah.
And I wish we had a clear answer.
I spent a lot of time just to go, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much.
And no one does. So that's the thing. No one knows. It doesn't matter what you call yourself. You can call yourself a demonologist or whatever. Chances are you still don't really know what a demon is. You may think you do. But unless, you know, one is coming over to your house for dinner at some point soon, which I hope they aren't. but unless that is happening and you're firsthand interacting with them, you really don't know what they are. You just have educated guesses. That's pretty much the supernatural in a nutshell.
Exactly.
Here. Nobody really knows. But it is, it's some interesting stuff anyway. And I felt like that, you know, we should kind of walk our way through what some of this stuff is and, you know, and what people report and, you know, the stories that people tell before we really got into, an episode that I felt was, unfortunate. It's an unfortunate episode more than anything, I think.
Yes. So. Well, some of this definitely walked through a lot of it and we still can. And some of the things, some of the signs, though, that I like to mention were unexplained noises, frightened animals, terrifying dreams, odors, manipulation of religious objects. And then I was thinking back, I was like, that sounds like my apartment on a bender years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like,
right. All of those things. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. The cat's freaking out.
I was going to say, I think that is, now that you mention it, I didn't even think of that. Probably no religious objects, but all the rest of the stuff. Yeah, pretty sure that is all stuff I have experienced and not infested by demons. So
I think it'd be when, you know, if I was my most depressed or whatever, though, I might look at the Bibles I have and just be like, why? Give me the answers.
Yeah, give me an answer.
But yeah, these sound, you know, terrible. And there's different stages with infestation or, you know, obsession and possession. Yeah. And we talk about how exorcisms can clearly be dangerous. And this seems like, I mean, there's a mandate literally because of this,
because of what happened here. And, you know, that stuff is kind of, is built up over time. And I've done some, I mean, I did back when I was working on the St. Louis exorcism stuff, I interviewed a lot of priests who were just absolutely convinced that, you know, everything that happened was absolutely legitimate. And, you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I've got conflicting opinions about that. But one of the most interesting interviews that I've ever done, and it wasn't specifically about St. Louis, but it was about exorcisms in general, was a guy who was an actual exorcist and was in charge of the exorcists, all the other exorcists in the state that he was in. And he had some really interesting, I mean, I thought he was kind of nuts, because honestly, that's a job. I think you'd have to be a little bit nuts to want to do that job, to be honest with you. I know that I said in here that, you know, this is somebody who's dedicated their life to this, and they are. And, you know, and I admired that. But on the other hand, I can think of other things I'd rather rather pursue. That's like, you know, I handle nitroglycerin for a living, and because someone has to. Well, okay, but it doesn't need to be me. So
there are other risky.
Yes, I can think of other risky things that I could rather be doing. But anyway, this guy said that it's very rare that he actually does an exorcism like what you think of as an exorcism, where someone is possessed. I mean, he said that normally when he gets called out to this stuff, it's for these kind of infestation things like we had been talking about in the early part of it, about, you know, the things that are happening in people's homes and things, and sort of building up to that. And that's all part of the criteria. I mean, you know, I we talked about this before, and we know how to, anybody wants to hear us talk about all the steps you have to go through for this, go back to the St. Louis
season
exorcisms
two,
episodes we did in season two. If you can hear them, because the sound sucks, but, just kidding. Anyway, my point is that, you know, when you get to start talking about this stuff, that is much more common than someone being absolutely possessed. That's really pretty rare.
Sure.
I mean, it happens in the movies all the time, but I don't, you know, and on TV, but I don't know in real life how often it really happens. I mean, we've seen a a huge, you know, it comes
uptick
in waves.
And, yeah.
Yeah, it comes in waves. I mean, it was kind of like the prosecutor in this particular case blamed her belief that she was possessed on The Exorcist. So you can imagine in the 70s, a lot of people were, you know, supposedly possessed.
Yeah.
And it does go through waves of interest and waves. And you hate to say it that way, but waves of belief, I guess, in that side of it. So it's, you know, I think it would be a tough job to try to sort that out, you know, but that's why these guys, that's why they have that job.
Yeah.
Is to sort that stuff out and find out what's real and what's not. And, you know, that kind of thing really doesn't get done in some cases and obviously didn't get done in this one. I mean, they should have really had someone who came in and looked at it rather than just taken off into, I mean, it's easy for me to say in hindsight, I know, but rather than just have somebody come in and just start doing an exorcism on this poor girl and, you know, let's stop all of her medication. Let's, you know, doctor visits, let's not, you know, and she didn't die from being possessed. She died from her illness, you know,
starvation
from an illness caused by her epilepsy, you know, which was severe.
There's two things that I want to connect now that you were talking about one of them, but I might have mentioned on the show before, but I was moving a buddy out of a neighborhood that was not particularly safe, and a lot of people in the neighborhood would talk about some supernatural things that they would experience around the neighborhood and stuff, and
neighborhood.
It was a whole neighborhood, and I'll tell you more about the neighborhood, I guess, off air.
Oh, okay.
It's an Alton, I can tell you that.
Okay.
And
it's probably where I just moved to. But
no, and so many people would say things, you know, supernatural things, and I was talking to them, you know, kind of quietly, but I was like, a lot of these people have, you know, some mental illnesses or, you know, other afflictions and things like that. And I said, you know, they've been up for days a lot of times. They're not being medicated. Don't you think that maybe, you know, they might be just, you know, hallucinating, seeing things? And he's like, hey, I'm not saying that you're wrong. He's like, but if something was going to like mess with them or attack them, wouldn't it choose when they're at their most vulnerable? Like, and everything.
Sure, and I
was
like, I mean, that makes sense too.
And I said, I hadn't thought of that. And I'm thinking now connecting it to, you know, of course there's going to be a spike after The Exorcist. I mean, that one is a little bit like, you know, way out there, but I could also see if you're a demon or whatever, it's like, hey, there's interest in this. There's more people open to this. There's more people afraid of this. Like now maybe is the time to strike and try to take somebody over.
Yeah, I mean, we could kind of put a, I guess, personality on these things. And you know, they're hanging out somewhere thinking, you know, hey, what's the best time to get somebody?
Yeah,
right. I guess you're right. I mean, that totally makes sense.
You know. I am applying like my human logic to this.
still.
Yeah. And whether it's possession, whether it's just mental illness, this young girl went through like hell. I mean, you know, like and to think about, you know, 68 starts suffering from the violent seizures. The church doesn't even really start to get involved till 74. So,
stuff's going on for all this time.
Yeah.
And but I mean, the church doesn't get involved until 74. But between then and, you know, I mean, they were already, you know, begging the church to do something, because it wasn't until, you know, 73 when she started thinking she was possessed, of course, after The Exorcist came out.
Right.
And, you know, and so then her parents are going to all these pastors asking for help. And, you know, and I'm sure that they weren't the only ones. I mean, you know, I know studying that, you know, going researching that history and stuff from that time period, I know how, you know, popular. I mean, that sounds terrible to say how popular being possessed was at the time, but but people gravitate toward that. You know, there's a huge, you know, idea behind this kind of stuff, especially when it comes to exorcisms and things, to see something and go, oh, wow, that's me. Or, you know, oh, that's, you know, maybe that would answer all the questions I have. Maybe I'm possessed. Maybe that's what's wrong with me rather than my mental illness. Maybe I'm possessed, you know,
right.
So it's I can understand where the where it would come from that that people would, and maybe that was part of the reason why the church just sort of backed off on the whole thing and said, look, we're getting swamped here by this craziness.
Right.
And, you know, you need to just, you know, keep taking your meds.
Yeah. Call us when she floats around the room.
Right. You know? Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's tough because if you have some sort of mental illness or ailment or whatever, you know, it's very hard to, you know, to self-diagnose or anything, but also just it makes more sense to think, okay, what makes more sense to me right now? Something's going on in my brain that I have no idea how to figure out, or something else from the outside.
Some outside influence, sure.
You know,
well, yeah, it's a much easier to believe that it's something from outside, because who wants to think that your brain is broken?
Exactly. You know? How do you prove
those
that
of us
yourself?
Who know our brains are broken, we're like, yeah, whatever. But
exactly.
People who don't want to admit it, you know, I guess it would be easier. And the other thing is they spent like 2 years harassing these priests about
this. Yeah.
You know, and while she gets sicker and sicker, and we don't know, you know, whether she was taking her medication the way she was supposed to. We have no idea.
Right.
We just know she got worse. And, you know, and believing that she's, you know, she's mentally ill, she has epilepsy, and she believes she's possessed. Well, she's going to act, you know, it seems like she would be acting that out as she was doing and freaking out her family and her parents and even the priests when they finally went. And then you finally had the bishop go, okay, fine. You know, that's kind of the feeling that you get from it, is that he just like, okay, well, you know, what harm can it do?
Of course.
And normally you'd say, hey, that's a great placebo thing.
Sure.
But I think that this was a little more serious than that.
Right.
Because of all the other things she had going on. It wasn't just a mental illness. It wasn't just a delusion. I mean, she was physically sick.
Right.
You know, and stopping all her medication and not seeing any doctors did not help the situation.
Of course. Right. And yeah, and I'm sure that there are times when, heck, you know, I would probably even do it. Just go into somebody's house with the little collar on and be like, you know,
sure.
What? Yeah, now you're cured. Now let's.
Well, and
the
I think office. And I think that, you know, when I interviewed that priest, you mm-hmm. know, he talked about doing, not necessarily doing that because they're not going to call it that. But that's the vibe I got from it, is that, you know, they show up and they make people feel better.
Right.
You know, and so if that's the case,
that's the end goal.
Without having a doctor involved to know that this girl, of course, they did have doctors involved, is the problem here.
Right.
And they ignored it and thought that just decided that it was a demon instead. And that's the issue that I have with it, is that,
yep.
You know, is that I wish that something else would have been done. Maybe they should have consulted with the doctor she already had before they went off and did this, because well, obviously we know how it turned out. So
and I know it's a different time, and also you know, I don't have children of my own, but talking about her sleeping on the stone floor and eating bugs and things like that, I mean, that's not okay.
It isn't but on the other hand, though, I think that with everything that was going on, the family had just become, it became like a shared delusion.
Sure.
You know, which makes sense, because they completely believe she was possessed too.
Mm-hmm.
So if they believe it, and, you know, that's often been cited as a possible explanation for possession, mm-hmm. is that the people believe it, the people around them believe it, and you get the priests who believe it. And then suddenly all these things that seem impossible, you're doing, your body is actually doing, you know, mind over matter kind of thing.
And, right.
I think that in this case, you know, her family was almost expecting these things. They expected her to mutilate herself and to tear up paintings and break crucifixes and, you know, and urinate on the floor. And I mean, this was all part of just a shared feeling they had that she was possessed.
Yeah. I think even without epilepsy or something that's also extreme, schizophrenia or something like that, I think back in the day, if I had a little inkling of that and then everybody around me was just like, oh yeah, you're possessed, like I could have easily fallen into,
you'd start believing it. Sure. Sure.
Shit.
Yeah.
I hated the line where you talked about her knees ruptured.
Yeah. From genuflections.
Yeah.
Just repeated it over and over and over again. And up to like 500 times in a night.
Yeah.
And it's like, and if you've seen that, if you're Catholic or you've gone to a Catholic service and you've watched people, or as they walk into the church and before they go to their pew, they will stop, they'll cross themselves, and they'll kneel down, and then they get right back up. But she was doing it over and over and over and would nonstop. And yeah, her knees just blew out on her.
Yeah, that's
That's
rough. I never had a knee blow out, but I tore my meniscus once. And just thinking about you believe it or not, people, you need your knees for a lot of things.
Crazy how that works.
You don't realize just how much you need your knees, or, you know, your back until you get, you know, sciatica or something or whatever. Yeah. So I did not like that. And then the two things that you wrote down, they sound basically like from a metal song or something, but the beg for absolution.
Oh,
and,
right,
you know,
right.
Mama, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
That one's heartbreaking.
You could kind of put that to a song, but yeah, that is a sad thing. I mean, and you know, I don't know. I picture the priests hearing this, you know, if she said beg for absolution, or maybe that was part of their story.
Sure.
And I say the real story is her begging her mother for help, which she did not give her. So, yeah. I mean, her mother was literally, and I've seen photos of it, dragging her around the room, going through ritual stuff. And she is unrecognizable from her original picture, and it looks like a walking skeleton, because by this time she was. You know,
I mean, at that point, her age and height and all that sort of stuff, like most of her 63 pounds or something, it's got to be just bone and
absolutely. And you see a picture of her before she died, that is all it is. She's just a skeleton.
It's
ghastly, it really is.
Gosh. So she ends up dying at 23 from starvation, and I'm sure
23, what a waste. I mean, here's a girl that, you know, even suffering from epilepsy, which came on late onset and startled, you know, everybody and freaked everybody out. And yet she still finishes all her courses, all her exams, takes the exam to become a licensed teacher, passes it, and could have really contributed a lot to, you know, the society.
Yep.
Instead, this is what happens. You know,
she exhibited more willpower by 23 than I have my entire life.
Yeah, right.
To be able to accomplish all of that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
with that going on, man. Yeah. And oh gosh. So those involved found guilty, but from what I understand, 6 months suspended sentence? So, like,
it was just one of those things where we got to do something. I mean, here's the evidence. We have to find him guilty. But, you know, even the prosecutor admitted that, well, you know, they've been through enough, you know, let it go. And they did wait 2 years. And I've never seen a clear explanation on that. I think there was a lot of back and forth as to how we're going to handle this. What are we going to do? And so time passed. And then, you know, even bringing it to trial, it got a lot of publicity. And, you know, it brought a lot of eyes. And my guess would even be that the church was part of the delays.
Of course.
You know, that they hemmed and hawed and kind of drug things out themselves, because while they paid for the attorneys for the priests and the family, because, I mean, it didn't look good to them either. You know, they looked like that the church had let them kill this girl practically, you know, even though that, again, done with the best of intentions. But we know what that means.
Exactly.
Know,
so. And it's got to be tough, especially, I guess, back then. Going against the Catholic Church too hard is probably not the best idea, but also letting them get away with this, that's a dangerous precedent.
Yes, absolutely.
So it's kind of, they got to find a middle ground, I would imagine, but as far as all the political stuff and as far as that went. And then they made a movie out of it.
And a good movie too.
It is.
Yeah, and you forget. I mean, I didn't forget, I guess, but I wasn't thinking about that. I really liked the director who did it.
Yeah.
He's, you know, done a lot of, I mean, Sinister, we always talk about how much we like him, and Black Phone too, those couple of his movies. And, you know, he was a believer in exorcism and possession and all that stuff. It was his partner on this, Paul Boardman, who was really skeptical about all of it. And I think that's what made it work so well. Because Laura Linney's character in this is very, you know, hey, I'm just doing my job here. You know, this is a load of crap and I'm just doing my job. And it's a great movie. I really enjoy it. I think everybody in it is really good. And it's a good movie. It's just
overall, it's a great one. So,
yeah, I know we were talking about Laura Linney the other day, but didn't we also mention Scott for some reason? Or maybe that was I felt like he came up not too long ago in one of our episodes.
But, yeah, he might have. I mean, I know we've talked about him before because he's popped up a couple of times in, you know, favorite movie episodes right. That we've done on movies or,
it was
you know, Black Phone, probably when that came out, because that was in my top for the year. So that might have been part of it, too. That's probably.
It's something else I was just now realizing is also I did finally watch VHS 85 and the other one that I hadn't seen that you liked. With the funny friend. Oh, gosh, I can't remember which one it was, but I watched all of them finally. I thought there was one that you actually. Oh, no. Never mind. That was
it a found
that,
footage?
That was
oh,
a
yeah. It was
that. It,
yeah, that it was liked. The next. It was the. Next to Ken or whatever right. It was. It was the last one that they did with
it.
The guy who was very funny. I
got
the camera guy.
So. Okay, so never mind. Yeah, so I watched the rest of the VHS movies that I hadn't seen.
Okay.
And he did
gotcha.
VHS 85.
He did. Yeah, he did. He did.
Got it.
So, yeah, he was in that. So.
It's – and like I said, you know, made the mandate for medical and psychiatric people to be involved with this determining, I guess, what if they're going to perform an exorcism.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Well, or at least to clear them to make sure they're healthy enough. I mean, right. I guess it's kind of like, you know, when people go into the hospital for an operation, they'll run a couple of tests on you first, make sure you're not going to die on the table.
Right. Is this going
to
make
kinda,
it worse?
I kind of think of it as that is what they're doing now is just to make sure people don't die on the table.
Yeah.
kind of thing. I mean, I'm not that that's funny, but you know what I mean? It is, you know, an interesting way of doing things.
It is, and it's not like this at all, but it always reminds me of the little that Robin Williams bit where he's like, whenever they're going to give you the lethal injection and they're like, don't want you to get that last bit of infection, so
right, yeah, they, where they use the alcohol wipe on you. Yeah, I know, right? Yes.
But yeah, if anybody, you know, fans of Dexter, Jennifer Carpenter is the star of this film. And it's great. I'd recommend checking it out.
Yeah, and, for sure.
Yeah, it's awesome. She does a great job.
So, see, we didn't have to have a, you know, two really crappy movies and a good one this week. So,
exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, that's a plus. So,
right. Well, hey, I don't have any Ghost Riders this week. Do we want to just talk?
Well, we can dive into some texts here. I've got quite a few, and I wish I could always have them all. I can't do every single one. I wish I could, but if you do have a comment or a question that you'd like to send us, you can text it to us on the hotline at 217-791-7859. That's the same number too, if you hear your review, and your text might get read on the show. So I've got a couple here that I want to make sure that we get in. And this one comes to us from Steph in the 516, and it says, hey, hi, Troy. Hi, Cody. At the risk of throwing myself under the bus, I'm playing podcast catch up from the fall. I know, terrible. No, that's the beauty of podcasts. Listen to them whenever you want. So first episode I jumped back in was when you shared about the Facebook hack. Okay, I'll skip this part. Sorry, blah, blah, blah. I'm still time traveling. So I like the new Facebook page. I'm still skipping ahead. I support Cody's endeavor. Okay. Still skipping. You two have been my commute buddy since 2018, and the show was always interesting and entertaining, and I appreciate all the hard work. P.S. I'm from Long Island, so the Amityville episode was fun for me. I was wondering if you're familiar with our most recent true crime story, the Gilgo Beach serial killer, who was only arrested in 2023, might make an interesting episode at some point, and maybe in 20 years or so.
I am not familiar.
That's the guy that, you know, the all those bodies they found in the barrels. The Long Island.
The barrel guy. Got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's all, I don't think he's gone to trial yet because you know I'm terrible about the really recent stuff. So I hear it. And I just sort of it in one ear and out the other. But unless it's like in my neighborhood or something.
Right.
But, this is something that I think once it goes to trial, we'll know more stuff about it. So, all right. So this one comes to us from this is from Josh Amen we talked about this 818. Mm-hmm. Listen to the latest episode. Actually, I have an entire DVD set of documentaries for the history and lore of zombies. You must have been listening to the Serpent the Rainbow episode.
Yes.
Also got a listener who commented on my podcast who heard about me on yours. So thank you for the shout out.
That's awesome.
I emailed Cody, about possibly interviewing you at some point. So yeah, that was from Josh. This one comes to us from Robbie in the 757. I'm not sure. Oh, this is Robbie who was looking for that book.
Remember
the book. Mm-hmm. So this is a follow-up to that. He says, I'm a little behind listening to the podcast. Just listened to the one where some author and title suggestions were given for the book I'm trying to find. Gone through a bunch of suggestions, but no luck. I really thought it might have been in the ones by Helen Hoke. I really appreciate your efforts to help figure out the title using the force for good. Mm. On another note, I think it'd be really cool if you could do some segments on ghost stories in the Tidewater, Virginia. It's a lot of ghost stories out in that area. So who knows, maybe in the future. And again, thanks for trying to find the book title. It's much appreciated. So far, no luck.
Yeah,
so book. It's still looking.
But so. we'll take suggestions.
Yeah,
you know, as long as until we figure it out.
And here's another suggestion. As a matter of fact, this one comes to us from Melissa in the 847, and it says, "I'm late to the mystery book search." Well, turns out you're not late.
Not so much.
We haven't found it yet, but I wonder if it is Horror Tales, Spirit Spells and the Unknown. It was edited by Roger Elwood with illustrations by Robert Baumgartner, published by Rand McNally in 1974. So, and then she goes on to add, I'm not sure if there were book fairs like Scholastic in the 70s. Says it, there were. And there was an author named Daniel Cohen, who I believe wrote spooky stories exclusively for Scholastic books. And that is true.
Okay.
I remember that too. So anyway, she's going to say, let me see what else I can find. So there's another suggestion. Who knows? It might be worthwhile.
Yeah.
This one comes to us from the 612. And David Brom, we were talking about this last time. I was listening to your last episode about the killings in the movie Badlands was based on. In the Hauntline segment, someone mentioned the David Brom case, the kid who killed his family with an axe in Rochester, Minnesota. I went on a haunted Rochester trolley bus tour for Halloween 2019 and visited the cemetery his family's buried at and heard the story, which brought back my memories of the news coverage at the time. I was born and raised a Minnesotan. Definitely something y'all should do a story on. Lots of claims of creepy goings on related to the kid and that house, even the gravesite of the family, if I recall correctly. And then adds, P.S., it so happens my parents-in-law are buried in the same cemetery as the Brom family victims.
Oh, wow.
Okay, yeah. So, all right. So, last one. This one comes to us from the 618. Ellen. My name is Ellen. Ellen in the 618. It says, listening to the Gacy episode, and just got to say, lots of people have abusive parents and have had head injuries as children and don't become sex offenders and serial killers. Agreed.
Very true.
I wonder if Gacy's chest and back pains were stress and anxiety. Yeah, and I agree with that. I think we talked about that, too. So she says, I'm just imagining his wife cleaning the house to get rid of that smell. Mm-hmm. So it adds that my name is Ellen, read Weird Illinois back in the 90s, was invited by a friend for a Haunted Alton tour around 2016, attended my first conference in the spring of that year, haven't missed one since.
Nice.
I bought many books since then, discovered a fascination with the paranormal. So yeah, thank you, Ellen.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, that is it for the Haunt Line for this week. So if you guys have a question or a comment that you would like to have answered, you can email them to Cody at AmericanHauntingsPodcast@gmail.com or text us at the Haunt Line, which is 217-791-7859.
Sweet.
All right. Yep. You ready to wrap this thing up?
Take us out.
All right. Thanks again for checking out the story and the post-mortem for this week's episode. We hope you love the show. And if you do, we hope you'll share it with your friends, family, strangers, or even people you meet on the street. Encourage them to listen. And if you get a chance, we hope you'll go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, even if you don't listen that way. And if you do leave a review, just a reminder, we'll be reading at least one of them during the post-mortem. If we read yours, we'll send you some cool stuff in the mail. Also, it really helps us if you check your iTunes, if that is how you listen, and make sure that the American Hauntings podcast is set to automatically download to your feed. You'll never miss a show that way, and it helps us out. We'll even reward you for that, too. We have a discount code that you can use to get 10% off any books, tours, or events you purchase from American Hauntings. Just use the code podcast at checkout. Save a few bucks on whatever you buy. Because, always remember, American Hauntings is more than just a podcast. It's also books, tours, ghosts, events, Haunted America Conference, and the American Oddities Museum in Alton, Illinois. You can find everything about us on the website at AmericanHauntings.net.
All right. Well, this episode of the American Hauntings podcast was written and narrated by Troy Taylor and was produced and edited by me, Cody Beck. To find out more about
the show. I like how you stress the me because
yeah, it's all caps. Yeah, check out the show notes or go to our website at AmericanHauntingsPodcast.com. If you want to find more about the podcast, you can reach us by you can reach us via email, by text on the hotline, or on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, and probably other places on social media that I don't remember right now. So thanks again for listening. We couldn't and definitely wouldn't do it without you. So until next time, goodbye.
So long.
See you later.
See you later.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.